Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Daphne Wisham, who's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economic Network. Since 1996, she has worked on research and advocacy at the intersection of climate change, human rights, fossil fuels, international finance, carbon markets, and sustainable economies. Wisham has played a leadership role on Capitol Hill, advising the Congressional Progressive Caucus on a progressive agenda for climate change, and she's currently conducting research around ways in which alternative metrics to the GDP, such as the genuine progress indicators, can be used to build a more sustainable society. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daphne Wisham.
Thank you for having me.
And on Earth Day, you have been involved with the idea of, for some time, of coming up with a better indicator than the GDP, the Genuine Project, as it's called. And there's also been a report issued by TEEB, which stands for the Economics of Ecosystems and Biodiversity Program, backed by the Group of Eight Economic Powers and the United Nations Environmental Program, that put the cost to the environment of doing business in the global economy of $4.7 trillion a year. And some people have even said it's higher. So give us a sense of how you're chipping away at the kind of global consciousness of this metric that we have, the GDP, which according to these results will literally kill off the planet before, and in doing so, of course, diminish profits.
Yeah, well, what this report found is that the top 100 most profitable corporations would make no profit whatsoever if they actually had to pay the natural capital they get for free. And, you know, when we think about whether it's issues around climate change or nuclear waste or food production, there are all sorts of natural resources that, of course, go into all of those assets as they're being produced. And for the most part, a lot of these environmental costs are externalized on all of us. As Paul Hawken once said, essentially what GDP is stealing from the future, selling it in the present, and calling it GDP. And clearly, you know, that's what we've been doing for decades, and we need to move beyond that because we're stealing the future of our children in the process. So this study, what it did is it began to evaluate the social and environmental costs of a variety of industries, and not surprisingly, at the top of the list in terms of the social and environmental costs that we're all paying is coal mining in both North America and in East Asia. And furthermore, the costs are so high that, according to this report, they far outweigh the value that this industry provides to the society. So one thing that, of course, the next question is, well, then what's to be done? Do we need a carbon tax? Do we need some other form of regulation? And what I wanted to draw your listeners' attention to on Earth Day is that some states are actually moving beyond GDP, or gross state product in the case of states, to something called the Genuine Progress Indicator. Maryland and Vermont have both done this. Other states are considering doing the same. And this is a way of sort of, in the case of whether it's the cost of air pollution or water pollution, both putting a shadow price on these pollutants so that policymakers and others get a real sense of what the true costs are, and not just looking at, for example, well, this will result in massive growth in gross state product or gross domestic product, but instead looking at what are the costs and benefits of this particular industry. You get a very different picture when you start to internalize those costs and benefits into the overall equation. And once you can have an honest conversation about those costs and benefits, you can direct policy in a different direction.
So in terms of the cost of getting electricity from coal, coal-fired power generation in East Asia is the worst. It costs an estimated $452.8 billion in natural capital impact per year. Second worst is cattle ranching and farming in South America that has the second highest regional impact. That is $353.8 billion in natural capital costs compared to $16.6 billion in revenues. And in the United States, coal fire generation in North America has the third highest regional sector impact with an estimated $316.8 billion in natural capital costs compared to $246.7 billion in revenues. So that's the point I was trying to make, Daphne. It looks as if the cost of doing business to the planet is so much greater than the revenues that these companies are deriving, and of course they will go down as resources and planet is depleted.
Yeah, I mean, the important point, of course, is to think, well, if we do internalize these costs and if we do evaluate these industries through this lens of really factoring in the natural capital costs, how would we change things? How would we make things more sustainable in the long run? And, you know, this report, which, of course, we did not author, this report that talks about just how costly business as usual is, but we did, we are doing a variety of reports and research around the ways in which this new indicator, the Genuine Progress Indicator, can measure the things that we treasure instead of just treasuring the things that we measure the way we do with GDP. You know, when GDP goes up, we think that's a good thing, but what we're not factoring in is the growth in things and in monetary exchanges, is that actually something that we want to increase? For example, just looking in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, GDP went up. Why did it go up? Because there was so much devastation. It was followed by a massive infusion of cash around the reconstruction process. So that doesn't tell us this is something we want to continue to repeat over and over again. But if we were to, for example, measure the costs and benefits of clean water supply, of abundant water that's enhanced by a healthy ecosystem and healthy forests and so on, we would begin to realize the kinds of natural capital that we can continue to preserve and protect and accrue if we protect Mother Earth.
So again, I'm speaking with Daphne Wysham, who's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economic Network. She's currently conducting research around ways in which alternative metrics to the GDP, such as the Genuine Progress Indicators, can be used to build a more sustainable society. So let's go back, though, and get a definition of natural capital and how it's measured.
Well, if you go to what I would encourage people to do is go to our website, which is genuineprogress.net, and we walk through all of the various indicators that are in place right now in the state of Maryland and in the state of Vermont through this Genuine Progress Indicator. It includes costs that we are paying for in one way or another, whether it's the cost of air pollution or water pollution in the form of asthma or in the form of healthcare costs, rising healthcare costs. It includes the cost of lost farmland and other things that we can actually put an economic We can put a price tag on these things, not that we're going to be buying and selling them, but we can actually estimate the value and the cost to society overall of these costs that are being externalized on all of us. It goes through the 26 different indicators that have been vetted by economists over several decades, actually, and put them. You can read through our website and see the 26 different indicators, and get a sense of it's not just environmental indicators; it's social indicators like inequality. In fact, our most recent report was on the cost of income inequality to the state of Maryland, and what we found is income inequality has an enormous cost for all of us in the form of course, you know, we pick up the tab if the poor can't pay for their health care. We pick up the tab if they don't get good jobs because they can't afford a good college education. We pick up the tab if there's an increase in crime. So, you know, this is a way of putting a price on the rise in income inequality in the state of Maryland. And what we found is if we were to simply return to the income inequality divide that existed in the late 1960s, the state of Maryland would benefit with roughly $60 billion worth of economic benefits to the state overall, which would be huge for the state. This is more than their annual state budget by a factor of two or three. So what we see is that, you know, through this new lens, the genuine progress indicator, we can see costs that otherwise remain invisible to us, including social, environmental, and other economic costs that we haven't put a price tag on.
But I guess, Daphne Wisham, the notion of natural capital, isn't that sort of tied in with what the human species have been doing to this planet since, you know, certainly let's just start with the industrial age, the idea that it's all there to be plundered. And when this country was built, when the railways took over, you know, they used to just shoot bison for fun from the railway carriages, and they almost wiped them out. I spoke yesterday at the LA Times Book Festival with a scientist who's the head of the Jane Goodall Institute at USC, and he was talking about that the gorillas and the great apes are almost down to the last 800 because of coltan mining in the Congo, where they just strip mine the rainforest and dig up holes for this component that's used in electronic gadgetry and is very much in demand. So obviously nobody's factoring in the value of the rainforest in the Congo, let alone the gorillas.
Yeah, I mean, I want to make a clear distinction between, putting a price on nature as in buying and selling and trading it, the way, for example, there's a movement towards buying and selling carbon, and actually putting an economic value on something that is being externalized on all of us, which is a different exercise, and it leads to a different outcome. One leads to essentially continuing to externalize the costs on all of us, but turning it into a profit motive to buy and sell and trade and theoretically to reduce overall greenhouse gas emissions with carbon trading. And what we're seeing is that approach is resulting in abject failure in the EU emissions trading scheme and all sorts of injustices that are being carried out globally. This is different in the sense that this is like a shadow price. It's putting a price on things that we will be paying a cost for generations down the road. It's giving us the long view rather than just the short view, like, you know, this is going to benefit you because you're going to see a growth in GDP. Instead, what we're doing is saying, okay, there will be certain things that will go up, certain indicators that will rise, and others that will decline as a result of a particular approach to development. And it's important for us to not value nature at zero the way it is now, but to actually begin to put a shadow price on it so that we can at least begin the process of having a dialogue on how to treasure, how to measure what we treasure and not the other way around.
So that is, I take it, why at the top of the list here is global warming, in the sense that that is, of all the six top environmental costs, are from one, greenhouse gas emission, water use, land use, air pollution, land and water pollution, and waste.
The cost, of course, we're paying the cost of climate change right now, whether it's Hurricane Katrina, Rita, Sandy. We're paying for it with erratic weather, with drought, with, an effect on our infrastructure. The increase in severe weather events means higher insurance payouts. It means more damaged homes. It means we're paying for it in one way or another. How we try to address this in the Genuine Progress Indicator is to assign cost to carbon emissions per ton, and roughly what a variety of economists have come up with is that the cost per ton is pretty close to somewhere around $100 a ton. Now, that's not saying we are going to actually be paying that price if we use this indicator. What we're saying is that's the cost we are now paying in the form of all of these things that I've mentioned previously. It's an incredibly expensive endeavor to continue to burn fossil fuels, and we're beginning to understand just how expensive it is. What we do in internalizing the costs is we have an honest conversation about what those real costs are.
Well, but if we have the honest conversation, of course, we can't even have a conversation about the reality of global warming because of the Koch brothers and others and some of the big oil companies who keep pushing and pumping the denial and funding denial. But obviously, beyond the conversation, what is needed is a carbon tax. I mean, there's a carbon tax that's been put in place in Australia. It was a tremendous political battle to get it through. The mining companies, et cetera, opposed it, and the oil companies, et cetera. But what you're saying is that the pollution is happening, and it's costing us enormously, but nobody's paying for that cost. So if you actually have a carbon tax, then that will get the polluters' attention, won't it?
Well, I mean, okay, so you're taking, I mean, I agree that it's something on the lines of whether it's a carbon tax or a fee and dividend, which is actually something that I would prefer because it's less regressive and it doesn't have the impact on low-income folks that an appropriately high carbon tax would have, and appropriate in the sense of internalizing the actual costs. When I say close to $100 a ton being the actual cost of carbon right now, that would be a huge burden if we were to actually impose that cost on consumers overnight. A fee and dividend begins to send the signal to consumers of fossil fuels that this resource is, in fact, very costly. The dividend would try to address the regressivity of the fee. But this is distinct from a carbon tax. This is essentially saying these are costs that we are now paying. This is how high they are. And we need to respond before we proceed down this path any further by honestly evaluating this cost. It's not an actual price. I'm not saying that an actual price isn't appropriate, but what I'm saying is that this tool is different. It's essentially a shadow price of close to $100 a ton for carbon.
Well, I was meaning that not that the cost should be borne by the consumers, but it should be the cost of doing business. in many ways, it reminds me of the argument that came up during the Obama-Romney campaign, where Obama mentioned that people in this country didn't get wealthy entirely on their own, these big companies and these rich individuals. They didn't do it on their own. Of course, Romney seized on that as though Obama was somehow a socialist and against the virtues of capitalism, when in fact he was just pointing out that there are certain things that make companies operate, make it easy for them because others bear the cost. So that's what my focus is on, you know, a system where this should be a part of the cost of doing business if we're all paying the price.
Yeah, but of course, what does business do? It passes on that cost to the consumer, unless there is some way of forcing, for example, Chevron to pay the true cost of oil, they will continue to pass that cost on to us. The question is, how does one move towards internalizing the costs without such a shock to our economic system as to render it sort of incapable of recovery, and especially for the poorest among us. And I think that's where this genuine progress indicator can be useful. It can begin the process of talking about the actual costs. Then we can begin to phase in, ideally, the appropriate policies to address these costs before they become insurmountable. It also, you know, these costs are risks that can mount for industries. For example, water. You know, the cost of using water for rice farming, just to take one example, with an increasingly unpredictable global weather system with climate change, we can see the price of rice go through the roof overnight, as we have in the past, with climate change, with rice crops failing. And the same thing goes for wheat. It's resulted in political instability in the Middle East as a result of the record forest fires and peat fires up in Russia. It destroyed an enormous amount of the wheat crop in Russia, and that resulted in the price of bread going up in the Middle East. And of course, then you have, you know, unforeseen consequences that have enormous economic costs. This attempt to begin to internalize the costs of natural capital is an attempt to also begin to predict some of the sudden shocks that we will be facing in the future if we don't internalize these costs, and also ideally to motivate business to change to address the depletion of natural capital before it all runs out.
Well, Daphne Wysham, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Daphne Wysham, who's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economic Network. Since 1996, she has worked on research and advocacy at the intersection of climate change, human rights, fossil fuels, international finance, carbon markets, and sustainable economies. Daphne Wysham has played a leadership role on Capitol Hill, advising the Congressional Progressive Caucus on a progressive agenda for climate change, and is currently conducting research around ways in which alternative metrics to the GDP, such as the genuine progress indicators, can be used to build a more sustainable society. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Nick Garino. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The man
the headline written down in America. The guy that lived next door in 305 took the kids to the park and disappeared.